spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Welcome to the Spoken Word Show on 3CR Community Radio. My name is Waffle Iringill. 3CR broadcasts from Wurundjeri land in the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past and present. On a lovely Tuesday evening on the 2nd of December, upstairs of the Alderman in Brunswick, Melbourne poets Dominic Heck, Eugene Bacon, and visiting from York, Oz Hardwick collaborated on a special performance of their poetry. You will be today listening to a partial recording from that evening. Like many of the best live performances, this was upstairs of a noisy pub and meters away from a busy tram route. We've done our best to clean up the audio, but we encourage you to relax and pretend you're right there on a comfy couch with a cold beer or kombucha in hand. Dominic Heck's work includes a novel, 3 collections of stories and 10 books of poetry. Her latest collection, Speculate 2021, is co-written with Eugene Bacon. Eugene Bacon is a computer scientist re-engineered as a creative writer. She has won and been commended in awards including the Britport Prize and Fellowship of Australian Writers National Literary Awards. Oz Hardwick is a European prose poet who has published over 15 collections. His most recent book was Retrofuturism for the Dispossessed, published by Hedgehog Poetry Press in 2024.
The first ones we're going to read, Dominique and I, are from A Short-Lived Tyranny, which is, beauty is a short-lived tyranny, said some dead Greek dude. And I suppose it sort of set me thinking about beauty and our ideas of beauty and so on. And so I'm going to start off with one called My Life as an Invasive Species. Every day I meet beautiful people with teeth like snow and symmetrical faces. Perfectly symmetrical, with rings of eyes and noses and a mouth in the middle like a split cherry. Though instead of a stone, there's a circle of teeth like snow. I've often wondered if such dental perfection was also the temperature of snow, and I long to kiss such a mouth, all cherry and icy thrill, though these people are too beautiful for my all too human irregularities. I once asked a beautiful person out to the cinema, and to my amazement, they agreed. I let them pick a date movie, and I learned more about Phoenix dactylifera in those 2 hours than I'd ever previously considered, as we basked in long, slow shots of its natural habitat in the more watery area of the subtropical deserts of the Middle East. Here an oasis, there a winding river beneath a dazzling sun. The name literally means finger-bearing, and I glanced down at my companion's 5 perfect digits, which radiated equidistantly from their impeccable palm. Perhaps I should have laid my awkward hand on theirs and leant in for that elusive kiss, but I could feel the frost on my outermost extremities, and I've always known when I'm out of my depth.
Before the moratorium, it starts with a rattle, not wooden, but silvery. It's not a song. Beautiful people spring from nowhere. They hover in a no woman's land between the earth and the sky, the living and the dead. They head for the embankment, jiggling coins in the pockets of gossamer robes, presumably hoping to return from their catabasis. They glide down 3 white marble steps and into the ebony pirogue. One single obol hollers Charon, daggers in his eyes. The daggers cut open intricately embroidered purses. The ferryman hurls all the useless clickety coins in the black river, slick its oil. Out of time and now space, the beautiful people are a Van Eyck painting. 10 beautiful bodies dangle from the rafters death makes with her legs. They arch their backs, contort, wreathe, grimace. One hides under death's phantom calf, most squirm, wriggle and thresh about among breasts with yellow eyes and sharp teeth. There are dragons and snakes and panthers and rats, pumas and crows and hyenas. A beautiful woman goes by on a stretcher in the oil solid grip of two firemen clad in royal blue. She's propped up, almost sitting, serene, with grey hair, her face unlined. A blood-spattered blanket conceals her legs and half her torso. She crosses the square crowded with jiddlers playing. Chance. If the children are happy, there are communists.
Alice Blue. As if we were never there, beautiful people shape their perfect white corners. Honeydew hands pat precise angles between white smoke walls, old lace curtains waving goodbye to chromatic shade. They expect perfection, and they get it every time. Look at them. Linen limbs wrapping around car doors, dangerous pets, and each other's ivory torsos. Other forbidden substances are available. Tongues tickle and tease at seashell ears, clicking like cursors. Accept, accept, accept. Lavender blush faces soft on steam-webbed windows. A trickle of mint cream perspiration. Even their shadows are ghost white, filming on the absence of buffer or blemish, as if we were never there, delicately snorting snow until every last corner is achromatic.
Figures of splendor. We've transformed the supermarket into a choir-filled arena that is swamped by screens and hooked to the pulse of jazz. The choir encircles us at ground level while drummers drool above. It's a surround sound trolley-free spectacle that swallows promises of redemptions and spits them out like Fabergé eggshells. The beautiful tiger stalks the two enduring eyes that slice the ground in the middle. Pummels capitalism with the excess it asks for, then waits for the dust to settle. A wide-haired Doberman pincher, indolent in the heat, sweeps biscuit crumbs and broken glass, mops puddles of truffle infused avocado oil. We bathe under moonbeams as Chenin Blanc shafts drop and curl around our feet. Dust never settles.
The last one I'm going to read from this sequence is the Chivalric Revival, and it sort of gestures towards a poem from the 14th century called Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which I recommend reading if you don't know it. And I live in York, which is one of the most wonderful medieval centred cities there are, and I feel very connected to that sort of history. It's called the Chivalric Revival. In the story I heard, the first beautiful person sat like a Christmas tree on a raised platform, while all about her played. They played pipes and viols in spirited rounds, and they played flirtatious games to displace their baser animal natures, chastely pecked cheeks sublimating barely controllable heat. Such is youth with its urgent needs and silly distractions. The second beautiful person was 1,000 years old, a blinding light in an intricacy of shadows, scattering beast shapes high against castle walls where they bulked into muscle and breath and scuttled at dancers' ankles. It was that sort of story, with courtesy and courtly mores draped like tapestries over hard, damp stone, and a hero who was little more than empty armour dropped into a lost forest, nuzzled by curious forms. But those beautiful people were bookends in a forbidden library, bearing up plots and implications. There's a beautiful lesson here, which I've heard is best learned the hard way.
I'll go on with the long player. A beautiful person hires a boat which burns on the water with perfumed sails. In its glittering wake I see a row of desks, each manned by a bored boy with inky fingers and a drifting mind. They are thinking about beautiful people and how it would be to be one, or at least to have one visit on Sundays and the occasional weekday evening. They could sit on the bed and listen to albums, poring over fantastic landscapes and dreaming of a beautiful future. But they are listening to a scratched LP of Anthony and Cleopatra in a cold classroom with a voice familiar from TV cake ads and an exceedingly good bard, and they marvel at how beautiful Cleo must have been to have poop of beaten gold. The record scratched and the boldest boy starts tapping his desk in time. Others follow until the whole class is hammering their desk lids in perfect synchronization. Slaves in the galley, amorous of their strokes. The beautiful person, nature outworking all fancy and fantasy, sails on. Thanks.
You are listening to 3CR Spoken Word. On today's show is a live recording of a poetry reading that was held on the 2nd of December at the Alderman in Brunswick. You are listening to the voices of Dominic Heck, Eugene Bacon, and visiting from York, Oz Hardwick.
Become a subscriber and support Radical Radio. Call 03-9419-8377 or subscribe online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
Now we're going to read individual poems.
Yeah.
You're going to start one, you start one, I do one, then I do this, then again.
Okay. I wasn't going to read this, but the shoe thing just made me, I thought I'd read this. It's called All My Shoes. All my shoes are different sizes but fit perfectly. I line them up in the parquet hall, first in pairs but then in size order. Biggest towards the door, smallest towards the stairs. There's a trainer between brogues, a walking shoe so far from its mate that initially I miss it, and so on. You get the idea. My first thought is that I didn't realise I had so many shoes, and there are, to be honest, some that I should throw away. But this is missing the point. Let me be clear, I'm not doing micro measurements here. We're talking about significant differences that I could spot from a distance even without my glasses. They form a long, slightly curving wedge, like a coastal bight, where each sole squeak on the floor is a gull circling above a small boat leaving from home for the last time. Its huddled passengers, scared, upset, but hopeful as they huddle close, watching the land recede. Blink, and it's a marimba, its deep tones bubbling through the whole house until it looses its moorings and floats into the sky, the colour of police lights, scattering those flat, happy gulls. By way of experiment, I close my eyes and pick two shoes at random from opposite ends of the line, not even checking for left and right. They are an exact match and fit perfectly.
I read a poem from Walter Fass. Let's see. I read Rose, c'est la vie. Rose, c'est la vie was a persona of Marcel Duchamp. Female. Rose, c'est la vie. C'est moi, says Marcel Duchamp. My cross-dressed body transfigured into ready-made in furs, almost femme fatale, lipsticked and bejeweled, intent on luring Man Ray and André Breton like some erotic algorithm. Uncanny signature pointing to the gap between ego and alter, retinal and anti. Such art, or is she merely oxymoronic, already fetishized? Rose's own preference, never for binary programs, nudges up through 100 years of seeming oblivion in the dim lights of libraries, studios, art catalogues. How sharp the eyes in the averted gaze, says an angel with horns called René Magritte. The signing of Rose's iniquation with a stroke of an apocryphal phrase.
I'm going to read you a poem from Saving Shadows. I wrote Saving Shadows during the pandemic. It was a very intense time for me. I felt really deeply and I found that it came out in the cross poems. So I'll read you A Mist Blanket. She walks with a gap across a city choked in smoke. Each day disrupted, a cynic's protest. Pundits joke, theories fly about the governor's hall in her torso. White are shined ravens and death watch beetles sew through it. No one offers a mist blanket so she can fold her wings at midnight. She looks at herself, mutters a prayer or a dream of rings, gives anyone who looks an opus of her hollow.
Yeah. 3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Been exchanging things for a long time, so without knowing that was coming, this couldn't be a better transition. And we've got all this background noise, which sort of makes me really appreciate, you know, the what Eugene was saying about that weird time that we were all separate from each other. There was a time that background noise, when you're doing reading, you just get a bit irritated, but now it's just lovely to have human sounds wherever you are, isn't it? I will never complain about noise bleeding in before. 2021 was the 700th anniversary of the death of Dante, and it seemed like a purgatorial period. And so a friend and I, that I write with a lot, we were talking on Zoom occasionally when we could face talking on Zoom that wasn't for work. And we wrote this brief collection of prose poems, sort of as a three-way conversation between ourselves and Dante. And we were sort of talking about the Purgatorio, the central part of the Divine Comedy, and the current situation we're going through. And at the end of the Purgatorio, Virgil, who's Dante's guide through hell and purgatory, takes his leave as they're edging towards paradise. And he says, in rough translation, "You have seen the temporary fire and the eternal fire. You have reached the place past which my powers cannot see." And then he sort of leaves Dante to go on his own, which I felt in 2021 we were getting to that sort of period of, okay, the guide's going to leave us now, what happens next? And so we called this collection The Still and Fleeting Fire from Virgil's Comments, and I'd just like to read you the opening one. And it's written with Amina Al-Yal, and we do a lot of writing together, and we sort of edit each other's work and mess about with it, and we trust each other quite a lot to be able to do that. We've written a lot together over the years. So it's the opening poem from this sequence, and it was written by both of us, as the whole thing was, called Up. Home is the place where dark is certified, stamped with more stars than we've yet named, where even the most trusted guides have nothing to offer but their experience of having been lost a million times before. Here, our boots are heavy with classical illusions, our clothes inappropriate for our unreliable memories, and even our conception of darkness is untrustworthy beneath the freshly illuminated sun. Stairs become slopes with terraces that track and tack their zigzag route to blue. Up. It's the only word that makes sense, and we repeat it like a mantra until it becomes nothing but rhythmical sound, and then nothing but circadian silence. Our self-appointed guide consults concordances and Google Maps, checks endnotes and suggested further reading, then offers us mint cake and spring water. There's a song on the wind that pierces our insubstantial bodies, assuring us that home is where the heart never lies, and that if we can just keep putting one foot in front of the other, we'll be dancing before we know it.
Mm. I'll read you a bit from Otopos, which is a triptych. So the first part is called Otopos. It's about my relationship with the Merikri around where I live. The second part is called The Merry Creek Murders, and the third is Fervor. So this one is from Fervor, it's about falling in love or whatever, the reignition of desire. Seven. Then there's the bend of the river of mists and shadows, the wind of uncertainty blew at the peak of acquired knowledge. Your teal gaze daring the barring of bows and arrows at the rising festival, though it was fall. Kangaroo apples were out and the soles of our feet, toughened by seasons of walking barefoot, took us to the ghost Yora Yora, and millennial waters cascaded upon our backs, and we took a boat at nightfall and disrobed further up country where waters were once sky blue, and we watched the radiant moon grow into a blood drop against the jet black sky, enfolding lines of flight. We parted at the bend of the river of mists and shadows, listening to the voice of the land and baby leaf fields, caught in a silver brightness, singing yuk, 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 in a language we didn't know. How our lengthening shadows would surrender to the purpling sky, like a secret, secret straining open, as if one intake of breath could inverse the order of things out there, where there is no time but the heartbeat. Light lashes the limbs of blackwoods, honey eaters hover over silver banksias bursting with nectar. In the pond, tiny frogs croak, croakle, croak. Thanks.
So during the pandemic, Melbourne went through a lot of lockdowns, each of them increasingly worse than the other because it was a cumulative effect. And as a migrant, it can be a really lonely time. You don't have that family support. And my friends thought I was okay. I thought I was okay. My son wasn't with me because I had him on shared custody and he had gone to his father. And one day I surprised myself by dialing a hotline and crying to a stranger called Deb. So in writing my response, from Saving Shadows as well, when I felt lonely, sometimes I would write a poem. And so this one is called An Earnest Blackness that I wrote when I was thinking of my mother. There's an animal tucked in my hair, and it hangs like a mirror I can't see. It's full of silence, shadows, asking, are we caged or free? Sometimes it licks my skin but doesn't disturb me. When I reach up to touch it, I can't remember where it is, if it is. Perhaps it's more cunning than I thought, hiding its paw prints, patiently waiting to catch me with reflections of ebony nights, white stars, burnt orange dust. I know and I don't, the hum of rain on the tin roof, the taste of my grandmother's sweetest mangoes, molded like a donkey's ear plucked fresh from a tree that's a silhouette above my mother's bones.
Thanks for listening to 3CR Spoken Word. On today's show, you heard a recording of a live poetry reading held at the 2nd of December at the Alderman, featuring Dominic Heck, Eugene Bacon, and visiting from York, Oz Hartwick. Tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. here on 3CR, or listen to a recording of this interview in our podcast, available at 3cr.org.au/spokenword.